Yes, friends, it's time for Let's Talk Mental Health. This local program discusses behavioral issues of concern to the North Shore community and resources to help. Let's Talk Mental Health is produced at the studios of KTWHLP in Two Harbors, Minnesota. Good morning, or afternoon as the case may be, and welcome to December's broadcast of Let's Talk Mental Health. As was advertised in last month's program, we're going to start something different this month, a three-part series on social media and mental health. Social media has had a profound effect on the world, particularly during this time of the pandemic. We rely on our cell phones and computers and apps to keep us informed, give us directions, help us stay in contact with other people. But the question we're going to address is, what kind of effect can social media have on mental health? The three-part series will look at it from the aspect of society, community, and individual. Do you find yourself unconsciously checking your phone or certain apps in order to stay up to date on information on what other people are doing? A Pew Research Center study in 2019 found that a third of American adults and nearly half of those ages 18 to 29 say they are online almost constantly. iGen did a report in 2017 which said that teenagers who spend 3 hours a day or more on devices are 35% more likely, and those who spend 5 hours or more are 71% more likely to have a risk factor for suicide than those who spend less than 1 hour. And the American Journal of Epidemiology found in February 2017, through a 5,000-person study, that higher social media use correlated with self-reported declines in mental and physical health and self-satisfaction. In order to lead us off with this discussion, our guest this month is Paul Baker, is a board-certified counselor who studied at Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia. He works from a strength-based and solution-focused, holistic, and mindful counseling approach with adult and adolescent disorders such as depression, PTSD, ADHD, anxiety, personality, and behavioral issues such as ODD, among others. He is specifically trained in trauma-focused cognitive behavior therapy and training resiliency with adolescents and trauma victims, which was completed while studying in Germany. Furthermore, his forte is in active and play therapy with children and adolescents that are looking for a different spin on traditional therapy. He has completed trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy training and often utilizes this to help individuals who have experienced trauma. He also draws from years of play therapy experience, which is often helpful for younger children to express and process their experiences. Caring and compassionate, he is committed to working with a variety of patient populations, including LGBTQ, to provide quality mental health care and customization treatment plans. He has the zeal and passion to accomplish any task put before him. Outside of work, Paul can be found bicycling around the North Shore on his road bike with his wife and kids, or enjoying all that the Northland has to offer in its abundant natural beauty. When not in Duluth, he can be found enjoying Germany and all that it has to offer. So, Paul, good day. We want to thank you very much for talking with us. We're here on the North Shore of Minnesota. It is the morning of December 18th, but what time is it and where are you?
Well, over here, it is 2 in the afternoon. I am in Nuremberg, Germany, and the sun is shining today. We don't have any snow, but it'd be nice to have some.
Paul, we've already heard about your educational background, the biography that I read. What got you to working at the MAP Behavioral Center as a mental health provider?
I started out working with families, and you know, I love that so much that I got to see the kiddos, obviously, as a part of that family. And so I started working more with kids and adolescents. And when I had started looking in the Duluth area, found MAP to be a great home for me as an independent psychotherapist. We all get to work from our own fortes. That's one great thing is, you know, working from that strength-based approach, not only as a therapist, but also when working with clients, you know, to always rely on those strengths that they already have. And that's one great thing that MAP provides for us, is not forcing us to work outside of our competencies. And yeah, it's a really cool place.
Well, our topic is for this month, the beginning of a three-part series on social media and mental health. So what is your interest in the social media as a topic?
It has been a huge thing, actually, you know, for me personally as well as professionally, because with us being overseas now, we used to be in the U.S. and our life and connection with my wife's family was all based on social media, on Instagram, on Facebook and FaceTime and all of that. And I took an interest to it early on about the blue light, about the dopamine effects and all of that. And just those overall screens and the presence, because we had a young kid at the time and who was just born and trying to keep him connected with grandmas or omas and opas here in Germany. I really wanted to know kind of what was going on. Am I exposing him too much to those kind of things? So I started looking into those things pretty early, blue light stuff, and started looking and getting blue light filters and things that we could easily do. Thankfully, my kids aren't to the point where they have their own Facebook accounts or anything like that yet. But I started seeing this a lot more in work, where it started to become an issue with not just one social media, but having multiple, having just this massive flooding of media coming at you, constantly having to check each source. And what that would present was detachment from the family, that family unit. And they would feel that a child would be sitting at the dinner table and they're not even present because they're checking their social media. So this started obviously coming into the workplace a lot and into my counseling sessions, and a really big source of conflict. From there, I started to see it a little bit differently, is that it can also be a great way for parents to share with their kids as well. And so it ended up being that, hey, a parent could also take interest in the things that they're posting, while the child could also take interest in the things that mom and dad cooked for dinner, instead of just eating it and then running back to the room and going back onto social media.
Well, thank you for that. Talking about social media, I guess a good place to start a three-part discussion would be on the topic of social media, and then we'll go into the relation with mental health. But what then is social media and its stated or implied purpose, in your opinion?
Its intended purpose was to, I guess, bring people closer together in a number of ways, job searches, to people with shared interests and values and being able to help them connect. And now social media has really become at times a forced relationship between consumers and branding and marketing. Well, a lot of body image issues and consumerism.
When you talk about consumerism, are you talking then about an economic impact that social media is having on society? And what would you think that would be?
Yes. So the part that I can talk to is really, you know, what I experience professionally and personally, but those targeted advertisements that we see like on Instagram and Facebook and things that pop up, they're getting us to buy things that we're talking about with our spouses or with our family members or with friends, things that we want. And all of a sudden we'll be getting advertisements for those things on social media. We will start seeing that more frequently also on the social media that we're seeing. Right, we'll start actually seeing these beautiful people that are branded as perfect human beings with no problems, no depression, no body image issues. They look super happy and they're wearing this beautiful North Face jacket that we want so bad, you know, or the next Lululemon thing that just came out and we want that too. So that is where getting us to buy more, because it makes us think that we're going to be happier too. Yeah, it's sometimes painful to see, you know, and as parents, they want to satisfy that and they buy those things a lot of times, and it's not a sustainable way.
Now, I'm an older gentleman here on the North Shore, a double retiree, so I'm not all that familiar with social media. Different platforms does social media include, and where are these available?
Social media platforms are going to be anything from TikTok, Tinder, which is also a dating app, but they get a lot of social media, actually. Facebook, Instagram, you're going to see. Really, there is a massive flooding of apps to the marketplace right now for social media, because everybody's trying to get a piece of this. There are over 3.5 billion social media users worldwide. That is an enormous amount of money, right? There's a lot of money to be made there based on the marketing as well. And obviously, Facebook is the most popular of all of the platforms. Of all the social media platforms, Facebook is the most popular. And when you look at different generations, you know, over 90% of millennials are the ones using social media. You've got in the upper 70% of Generation X, and you've got almost 50% of baby boomers now that are actually active social media users, which is not that common, you wouldn't think. But 50% is a large amount, because they wanted to stay connected to their grandkids and their kids that have moved around, that are constantly busy with hockey and stuff. So it's kind of been a forced integration versus them just volunteering, going and like, hey, I want a Facebook account. But they're connecting with old classmates over the years as well, people that they haven't seen in 40, 50 years. So there's some really touching stories to Facebook, and they've marketed those stories on TV, and I've seen them, and it gets people involved. But then there's some negative stuff that goes with that. And anyway, so the social media platforms, there's a lot of them, but those are the main ones.
Well, when you talked about connectivity for individuals, for humans using technology, how would you perceive that society is using social media in a positive context?
What I think of right now is education coming to the forefront. I've been involved in court cases also online. So the government is also using it really well, but jumping back to education. The Zoom meetings that I've been seeing a lot of, Zoom is the main video source that most schools have been using since the pandemic started. What I've been seeing is some schools are making it very fun for kids to be able to do exercises and yoga and things instead of just assigning busy work, attending these Zoom meetings and then just everybody doing the work separately. They get everybody involved and they'll do workouts and meditation and yoga together. So the education system, I've been seeing a really great positive effect on utilizing that social media because it gets everybody involved. You don't get to hide in the back of the class feeling like an outcast. You know, everybody gets to do their own thing and there's less judgment and there's less concern about their own body image. Most kids, when they're getting dressed for gym, they worry about what they're wearing and it just takes a lot of that out of it. And you just get to show up, people see your face and you do your thing.
Well, with that being said, our topic really is titled Social Media and Mental Health. When we segue over into mental health, what then is the connection between social media and mental health?
I guess you could say it's a double-edged sword. There's some good effects and some negative effects. For those that are feeling depressed and anxious and they look to social media so much, you know, to relieve them of those symptoms, and that it only exacerbates them to the point where, well, this turns into a habit. This turns into an unhealthy addiction.
With that as a negative aspect, have you used social media in a positive aspect as a counselor to help do telehealth for patients during the COVID pandemic?
So I guess, yeah, that's one thing that happened since we moved here last year. That is, I was a little bit before COVID when we moved here, and that was a relatively new thing. As I was talking to clients about going online, it definitely was a different thing because not everybody was doing that, and actually very few were doing it. I was known for always doing active therapy with people, but going to online and doing telehealth, one thing that I noticed was it eliminated that greatest barrier, that travel. Travel being such a huge, huge thing, especially in the winter, as the snow finally comes eventually, people will be having to risk their lives basically to go out to get counseled, and it just puts more stress on them. So being able to have that telemental health and telehealth for, you know, medical providers for prescriptions now and everything, everyone has had to come together as a community and find ways to be able to do this all online. I've had very, very few cancellations, which is one thing that happens a lot. People either no-show or they cancel, and that happens a lot less now. Telemental health setting, because we have a greater connection, and it's easier to cancel over text versus having to call the office. I mean, there's just a greater barrier there to canceling. You know, if something comes up, at least that text is a segue to me saying, hey, is everything okay? And that still facilitates that therapeutic relationship where then, you know, I can at least know what's going on.
Paul, one of the go-to standards for mental health is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Health Illnesses, and the newest one is called the DSM-5. Would you happen to know if the DSM-5 addresses social media specifically? And if not specifically, are there other issues in mental health that are affected by social media?
The DSM-5, they've been trying to figure out where to go with this. How can they approach targeting social media as an actual diagnosable condition? They have stated that it's a condition for further study. That is what they're willing to say. It's a condition for further study. It's basically just not clear whether or not that internet addiction, that social media addiction, is whether or not it truly represents a manifestation of an underlying disorder or if it is truly a discrete disease entity of itself.
I've read in articles where there's been a correlation between social media use and the mental health conditions of addictive traits, depression, and anxiety. Is this a fair assessment, or as you just alluded to, is this still something that is under study for future research papers?
That's a pretty fair assessment. You know, it can be harmful for both conditions. Social media can also be a great self-medication in those senses too. If you're depressed and you're using FaceTime or Skype. So when it's video social media, it actually is helpful. There have been studies that have found that video social media is that double edge, that is the other edge of that sword, that where it actually helps enhance the life quality of those with persistent depression and anxiety and dealing with these addictive traits to get away from digital, tactile writing and assessment of just Facebook and constantly skimming and skimming and skimming, that kind of brainless detachment. But actually interacting with somebody on a video chat level, that interface between face and face, and seeing somebody smiling. And it's a different thing. So anyway, there has been research that does promote that can be helpful as well. But what you said also is that it definitely, with the depression and anxiety can worsen it. You know, and the DSM-5, I think, will start to address those conditions and make it more of a subtype, maybe, for a specifier, much like they have with the autism spectrum disorder. And they've used specifiers throughout there with the three different categories.
It sounds like we have a fine gray line between positive use for social media and the different realms of society and the possibility of negative, meaning what we just talked about, the addictive traits leading to depression or anxiety or actually helping with them. What would you say may be the different indicators that would indicate a reliance on social media?
So that's going to be looking at, I think, time, right? The daily time spent on social media. If you're averaging more than 3 hours a day on social networks and messaging, that is excessive. That is termed excessive now just because of overall interaction with other people around you, the real world around you. Not that that's not the real world, because it has become the world that we are living in COVID. And every time that somebody goes into quarantine for several weeks, that is the only world that they feel to exist in. But still setting those 3 hours a day, those social networks and messaging. And then I think video chat has to be separate from that. If you're doing video chat with friends, that shouldn't be considered in those three hours per day. I think that definitely has to be something that separates those indicators of reliance versus non-reliance. And then you start to look at the compulsion. Like, I feel this need to check. I have to check. So beyond those 3 hours, why are they using it? Are they afraid of missing something? Do they just have to go check on something? So we talk about that FOMO, right? That fear of missing out, that compulsion to keep checking, that compulsion to continuously engage in that activity, regardless of the negative impact that it's giving. I mean, that's behavioral addiction. And that's what we start to see. And that's where I think define where it's become an addictive behavior.
Paul, you just mentioned twice the term addictive behavior. From a counseling standpoint, can you just give us an overall, general, layman definition of what addictive behavior is?
It is basically, like I said, if we engage in a behavior, if we take part in something that, by it giving us a negative impact, it's hurting us mentally or physically, and we feel this need to go back to it, this physiological just drive to pick up our phone and open it up. If you find yourself doing that, I think functionally, beyond what that definition is, it's if you find yourself in your body, continuously doing something that is not helping.
This seems to go almost hand in hand with what you had talked about at the beginning of the interview when you had talked about blue lights and dopamine. And now when we're talking in a mental health perspective, in an addictive nature or a possible addictive nature, there are chemical changes that occur. Readings have talked about the dopamine effect and about melatonin. Can you discuss those two?
I won't go too deep into it because, I could talk about that till I'm blue in the face. A very simple way is that when a person posts a picture, they get this positive social feedback, right? People are going to comment on it. They're going to like it. So on Instagram, you like a comment or you can post on it. Same thing with Facebook. You post it, you can like it. Same thing on TikTok. You get views. What's trending? So when that happens, when they post that picture and they get that positive social feedback from whatever channel of social media they're using, it stimulates the brain to release this dopamine. That is a reward agent, basically. Rewards that behavior, and it only perpetuates that social media habit. It's only going to keep you going back to it because you just got that feel-good feeling of dopamine. And dopamine, it is also when we play a video game. We're playing a video game and we shoot and get a digital kill, a virtual kill. It gives that dopamine as well. Dopamine is utilized in a number of symptoms too. When people are struggling with severe persistent mental illnesses and they just can't produce enough dopamine. For people like that, maybe the microdosing, going to social media for those 3 hours a day just to get enough dopamine, just enough, then it's effective. It's effective for increasing their overall quality of life. But if we go too much, that's when you get into that habit. And that is when we tip that scale and we start going downward. And then throughout the entire day, as we're using this social media, we look at dopamine, and then we go back over to, it's time to go to bed. And we've been on social media all day long. And finally, here it is, lights out. Go to bed, and you can't, because you're still feeding off this high that you just got all day long based on, you know, the social feedback that you got, and you have to go to sleep. And the problem is it suppresses our melatonin. Not only does the blue lights that are in those devices that they put off, you can only decrease so much until you're going to absorb some. What that does, that suppresses melatonin, and that's that in your brain telling your body, hey, it's time to go to bed. Time to wind down, go to sleep. That's what happens when the sun goes down, starts getting dark. We've conditioned ourselves over hundreds of years that when the sun goes down, we should be going to bed. Bad things happen. We should be sleeping. But it also decreases your morning alertness. And that's the trouble with not having melatonin being released into our brain and body at the right time, is it's leading to brain fog in the morning. We are slow, just crawling along, and we feel just super groggy, because then it's just furthering the cycle of not proper sleep. We're just going to sleep because we have to, and get up and go check right away again and start pumping our bodies full of all of that blue light and dopamine. And yeah, the cycle just keeps going.
Paul, thank you. You've just described very well for our listening audience about the physical reactions and also how the social media grants instant access and instant gratification. So it is 24/7, 365. And in this day and age, when we have COVID-19, what then is the impact that the pandemic has had regarding social media usage?
Well, it's gone through the roof. We saw that with a lot of these Fortune 500 companies that do invest in these social media platforms. They have become incredibly wealthy because everybody's using them. What COVID has done is created really just the perfect storm here, and parents have had to come to terms with this, but kids are loving it, loving that they have a reason to be on their devices all day long, and they can get away with doing stuff that they shouldn't be doing. They're in a Zoom meeting. A lot of times friends are just texting each other. So not to say COVID has brought a lot of complexities into a classroom that teachers aren't prepared for, that parents aren't prepared for. Unfortunately, it's constantly changing too. As we start to figure out more and more about these platforms like Zoom getting hacked, Zoom got hacked last year. The Department of Education, they had to make some changes to make sure that didn't happen anymore. And some schools had a choice to change platforms and use different types of video chats. So this has put this red light really for a lot of hackers and people out there that are looking to make chaos in people's lives as well. Social media during these lonely times has invited a lot of scammers, people like that, that are predators, and they're looking for people that are sad and willing to just go online and fall into these traps.
Paul, as a counselor, if any of our listeners find themselves, after hearing your discussion, feeling that maybe they're too reliant on social media, or maybe their children or grandchildren maybe, what would your recommendations be as a counselor, and what are your recommendations going forward?
My biggest recommendation for most parents, and actually all parents, having those full transparency with your kids, open lines of communication on everything, being informed, being aware of what your kids are doing and what you yourself are putting into your body and your mind, you know, in the form of social media, but also from the food that we eat and the things that we watch. We have to see them. They're either positive or negative. We could play in that gray area, but for the sake of mental health, let's look at positive and negative. It's either fuel for the fire or else it's smoldering it. And so when we look at social media and just all those thoughts and the things that we're putting into our minds, we want to be very, very careful. Words have power. And just being mindful of the things that we're doing and the impact that they're having on us and our kids, and trying to find balance in all of that. Sticking to, I'd say, that rule of three, no more than 3 hours of social media aside from the actual video calls. And you can track all of that on your phone. Can set all of those reminders up. For example, my wife actually has her own thing set up on Instagram, and I do too for social media stuff, that it tells me when I've reached my limit and it locks me out. It says, sorry, you've reached your limit for the day. So that is one thing that parents can look into, is educate yourself on the things that you can do to protect yourself and your teens away, from turning these things that could help our lives, really make us more connected during the holidays, and helping it not turn into a habit.
Paul Becker, we want to thank you for being our guest speaker today. Our topic has been the first of three shows on social media and mental health. Paul Becker is a board-certified counselor at the MAP Behavioral Health Center in Duluth, who's currently located in Germany. Paul, we want to thank you again and invite our listeners to do more research. Go online, believe it or not, and use social media to research the topic for yourself, for your family members, and for your community. And to join us again next month when we'll be talking about social media, mental health, part two, be looking at how it affects us more in the local community. Hi, this is Chris Belfield, your host of Let's Talk Mental Health, letting you know that we really appreciate your feedback. You can send emails directly to the station at ktwh.org, or the program also has its own email, and that is lcmhtf@gmail.com. Again, lcmhtf@gmail.com, and that stands for Lake County Mental Health Task Force. And that is the group under which this broadcast is being brought to you by. Additionally, there is the North Shore Mental Health Group in Silver Bay. They have a fantastic website. You need to check this out because they have daily encouragements, lots of resources available. And they also sponsor a peer support group called GLAAD, and that's Group Living with Anxiety and Depression. And they are meeting online. For more information, again, go to that website. Speaking of websites, there is also the Northland Healthy Minds Organization out of Duluth. Again, a great website with lots of pertinent information and resource material for the local area. Speaking of the local area and our own Lake County, on the Lake County website, there is the Health and Human Services Support Guide. And in it, you will see a listing for mental health resources, 9 pages of local resources with lots of websites, phone numbers, and information that you can use. In the county, we also have the Human Development Center, again, accessible through Lake County website. And at our own Lakeview Hospital, they have mental health services being provided by a nurse practitioner. If you need it, look on their website. Finally, Lake County and Cook County have a cooperative agreement for an Arrowhead Emergency Services Chaplain Corps. These chaplains serve for our emergency responders, but also the community at large, and particularly at this time of the pandemic and some other challenging events, they've established a chaplain hotline. Hotline is for anyone to use, and it's available at 218-834-8504. Again, that's 218-834-8504. Until next time, for Let's Talk Mental Health, this is your host, Chris Belfield. Thanks for listening.